and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from New York City, I believe, still in the Seaport Studios, Tim Bontemps.
That is correct. Day full of television, because sometimes we get things delivered to us, like Mark Cuban deciding to go have a long chat with Ben McMahon before the game on Wednesday and making TV magic for the next 24 hours.
Is that how you would describe it as a chat? That sounds amicable.
Ben McMahon has been banned from the arena at least once and maybe banned twice again in the future. We'll see.
Yeah.
First time was just from the locker room.
That is the voice of the gentleman joining us from Dallas, Texas, where we had an interesting evening last night, although the Mavs won. It's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Can you say howdy, partner, to you, McMahon?
I was called something else, a few other things. But to be clear, this was not just a chat with me. This was with the media at large. I actually joined as it was in progress. I got a little TV time last night. I didn't have nearly as much makeup on as Bontemps does right now. You're still ugly as hell, by the way. But I'm sitting there, doing my little Sports Center hit at the top of the 5 o'clock local hour. And I look over my shoulder and I see Brad Townsend with the morning news sitting next to Cuban courtside. I see our old colleague Stein kind of mosey on over. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Here we go. So yeah, Cuban used to, on his little Stairmaster, which would, like, you'd walk through the Mavs locker room back to the weight room in the corner there. Cuban would have his little Stairmaster set up, and for years and years and years, it would be pretty much an every home pregame thing. And he would just, it used to be like a jukebox, right? You put your quarters in, you get all these golden quotes, and boom, off you go. When they redid the locker room, basically my understanding is players and staffers kind of went to Cuban and said, hey man, like, players don't want guys hanging out reporters back there. Like, can we stop that tradition? I also think perhaps Cuban's hip replacement surgeries had something to do with this tradition ending, but that's pure speculation, which I'm not a big fan of doing. So anyways, haven't had those for a few years. Now, if you really want to get Cuban, you can show up to the arena a few hours early and hope to catch him after his pregame shooting sessions, because we all know the 60-year-old owners, jump shot. Sometimes these sessions are supervised by their shooting coach, Peter Patton. Got to work on that form. No, that's an important thing. But he has been, and he says by design, letting Nico Harris and the new GM kind of take the reins, Jason Kidd, he has been much, much less accessible than in years past. Also, he's been not around the team nearly as much. The last time I'm aware of Cuban going to a road game was in LA, the first game that Kyrie Irving played in a Mavericks uniform. This miserable five-game trip that they just went on with their season on the line, Cuban wasn't there for any of it. But Cuban decided impromptu Wednesday night, hey, I'm going to make myself available. Coincidentally, Luka talked Tuesday and bemoaned how much worse the Mavs chemistry is this season. And I asked him, how much do you guys miss Jalen Brunson? Kind of chuckled, pained smile, said a lot. So Cuban came in there with a pretty clear agenda. The top thing on that agenda was, hey, let's set the record straight. I didn't screw up the Jalen Brunson situation. It's all Rick Brunson's fault. The fact that Jalen Brunson got much more money from the New York Knicks for a much bigger role that he's thriving in for a playoff team. The person to blame for that is his dad. And I'm sure his dad, an assistant coach with the Knicks now, really feels terribly about putting his son in such a great situation. But don't blame Mark Cuban for that. Not Mark Cuban's fault. All Rick Brunson's fault. Things were going great as far as trying to keep Brunson long-term, and then Rick Brunson came in and screwed it all up. So that was kind of Cuban's primary agenda yesterday.
Let me just try to frame this. So 2 days ago, so this was Tuesday at practice, Luka spoke and gave an answer, I think, to your question. Was it your question?
Mm-hmm. About Brunson?
about Brunson. Can you set the stage for that? Because I suspect, I don't know why Mark did this on Wednesday, but I suspect what Lucas said on Tuesday may have pushed Cuban into wanting to speak on Wednesday.
Yeah. And so, you know, one, credit to Luca for understanding, hey, as the face of the franchise on Tuesday with things having gone to hell, he was going to make himself available and speak. And there was also the whole, are the Mavericks just going to pull the plug and tank the rest of the season talk out there, which I'm here to tell you, that did not come from, you know, the figment of somebody's imagination. That was something that was being discussed at the top levels of the organization. But Luka made it clear that ain't happening with him. He's not going to quit while they have even the slimmest of hopes. And so I think Luka very clearly wanted to make, you know, make it 100% clear he's not on board with that. He's playing as long as they've got a chance. So I think that was kind of Luka's primary reason for wanting to be in front of the media, because Luka doesn't like doing media. He very rarely talks to the media after practice, but Tuesday he did. So he was very clear, very adamant, I'm playing as long as we have any chance. And as he said, he understood it was a little chance at that time, but he was going to play. They were going to keep believing. But then as he's talking, he admits, hey, no, the confidence isn't high. Like he said, we've lost 9 out of 10. It had only been 7 of 8, but you got the point.
It felt like 9 to 10.
Yeah, it felt like 99 out of 100 at that point. But then he starts talking about just how much the chemistry has declined since last year. And, you know, he said basically, hey, chemistry's a process. Like, he wasn't trying to say Kyrie came in and screwed things up. That wasn't his point. But he's just like, the chemistry just hasn't been the same. And Luka took accountability for playing like crap on defense, you know, kind of admitted that he's worn out. You know, he blamed his hectic schedule between the Mavs and Slovenian national team, the heavy workload early in the season. He did acknowledge that his condition is an issue, but he did take accountability for that. You know, he said he's the leader of this team, so the blame's on him ultimately. But when he's talking about just how much the chemistry has declined, it's just not the same as it was last year. Anybody who's around the team understands how vital Jalen Brunson was to their chemistry. Like, Luka is going to be, he's an emotional guy for better and for worse, right? Like, he's going to, when times are good, it's that infectious smile. When times are bad, he's got terrible body language. Brunson was the balance to all that. Brunson was the even keel guy. Brunson was the connector behind the scenes. And so, like, it's a natural question. How much do you guys miss Jalen Brunson? And this is the first time all year, like, Luke has always obviously been complimentary of JB, but this is the first time all year that he basically said, man, you know, we miss this guy a lot. And again, it was not even so much what he said, but it was the look on his face when Brunson was brought up. And like, the rough translation is, man, letting Brunson leave for nothing was a devastating blow to this franchise. And if you're wanting to assign blame, that blame goes to Mark Cuban. But Cuban says, hey, if you want to assign blame, that blame goes to Rick Brunson, because, you know, all was swell until Rick Brunson wanted Jalen to get a nice fat contract.
Which he did, and which was appropriate.
Yeah. And now, what's that dispute here? The big dispute. They could have signed Brunson to a four-year fit by CBA rules without cap space. He was eligible for a four-year $56 million extension, the same exact extension that Dorian Finney-Smith signed 2 seconds after the trade deadline passed, right? And the Mavericks weren't willing to put it on the table until 2 seconds after the trade deadline passed, in case something came up for Dorian Finney-Smith or for Jalen Brunson. What's that
dispute? Such as trading for Kyrie Irving.
There you go. What's at dispute? Yeah, if they were able to trade for a star last year, that's what they were trying to do. What's at dispute is whether Brunson told the franchise, or the franchise was told, that Brunson was willing to accept that extension as late as the first week of January last year. Now, Rick Brunson told me on the record during the playoffs last year. Matter of fact, right after Brunson went for 41 and 31 in wins over the Jazz when Luka was sitting out, that they had gone to the Mavericks and said, hey, in early January, if you put it on the table now, we'll sign it. I didn't hear anything from the Mavericks disputing that at the time. Now, I did start hearing stuff after it was very clear that Brunson was going to New York in late June. Suddenly, oh, hey, that's bull. That's not true. Cuban finally went on the record with that yesterday. And by the way, Jalen has confirmed this when he talked to our old colleague Chris Haynes in the last couple of weeks. He confirmed it himself. So the Brunsons say it's true. Cuban says it's bull. You know,
I mean, Cuban was he. I mean, this I have to say was not foreseen. I've seen not something I've seen before. He pulled up his phone and was showing text messages, right? Didn't he show? He's like, look at these text messages.
Yes. He's showing text messages from 14-month-old text messages. He read a couple of his replies to Aaron Mintz, who's Brunson's lead agent at CAA. But he's showing us, literally showing us text messages from Nico Harrison, his general manager, from 14 months ago. And the text messages...
They were text messages to Cuban or text messages to Mintz?
Text messages from... Cuban, oh, I'm sorry, from Nico to Cuban.
Okay.
And like the text message, this was Cuban was saying, this is from January 25th. And he's saying, the exact text message is from Nico to Cuban. We aren't going to make a decision on JB based on what Aaron says his dad wants in July. And then Nico also says, I agree with you to Cuban, but I just think the New York thing is too tied to their family to overcome. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's a July 25th or a January 25th text message. What about the first week of January? Cuban says there's nothing there.
Right. So just to cut through all this, basically Cuban is defending how the team lost Jalen Brunson, basically saying it was out of our control and that you and also Luka shouldn't blame me or us for it. That's what he's basically saying. 100%. Here. And yes, the evidence he's offering up is, look, you say that we could have done the deal in January. Here's discussions that happened with his agent in January. We couldn't have done the deal in January. And so we're parsing all these details, but at the end of the day, no matter what you want to say about it, they lost Jalen Brunson for nothing. You can spend another 3 hours going over and presenting cases from other sides. You can present Jalen's side, Rick Brunson. You can present the agent's side. At the end of the day, he's in New York. They lost him for nothing. And another thing that happened is that, you know, and this, even when Jalen was gone, the Mavericks believed that they could at least salvage the situation in a sign and trade and get something back from the Knicks. The Knicks have a number of young players and draft picks, including the Mavericks pick this year, which would be helpful to have back, quite frankly, at this moment. And I think the Mavericks, beyond not getting a deal done with Jalen early, when it came time when they were going to lose him, they misjudged the market there because they didn't think the Knicks were going to have enough cap space. 100%. And the Knicks pulled off a couple of moves in and around the draft and got the cap space. Now, they don't have a crystal ball. They couldn't have known where the Knicks were going to be, but at the end of the day, they misjudged it. You know, I've covered many teams with hundreds of moves over the course of my 20 years covering the league, and I see teams make ingenious moves that fall their way, and other teams look silly because they thought something was true and it wasn't, and that's what happened here. And so they got to own it. They screwed it up, and I think they're in the
totally
bargaining stage of loss. They haven't gotten to the acceptance stage of the loss.
Go ahead, man. This is where Cuban got pissed at me yesterday, called me a moron, which is one of the nicer things he's ever said to me. But like, dude, you said at the end of the season, we have his bird rights. We can pay more than anybody. And you did not try to outbid the Knicks. And he's saying, we never had a chance. He said, I'm quoting him here, we didn't know what the bid was. They never gave us a number. Knowing the numbers now, I would have paid it in a heartbeat, but he wouldn't have come anyway. There's just no possible way that it was about the money. I mean, there was no negotiation. They didn't give us a number, blah, blah, blah. First of all, dude, the number was freaking reported by me and other people days in advance of free agency, which is why the damn Knicks got hit with a tampering charge. Like, bull crap, you didn't know the number. It was freaking reported publicly. And listen, this is total revisionist history crap by Cuban, because all I was hearing from people who were trying to justify Jalen Brunson leaving for nothing is, wow, what a drastic overpay by the Knicks. The Mavericks were willing to go to, quote, Fred VanVleet money, which was about $21 million a year, 5 for $105 million. Boy, there's a tough decision. 4 for $104 million or 5 for $105 million. You think Brunson might make $1 million in that extra year? You know, when this contract comes up, give me a freaking break. You did not. They did not try to outbid the Knicks. Look, you can argue, should they have come in with a max number? Because it got to a point where their only chance was to come in with a max number. You can argue whether that would be crazy or not.
But again, we can stay in the trenches and argue about the deal. Yeah, the bigger thing is this season has turned into a bad situation. And so now people are taking a step back and worrying about the big picture, which is Luka.
That's what I wanted to get to. There's a few indisputable facts here, right? One is, from the very beginning, the Mavs messed up and gave Jalen Brunson a 4-year contract instead of a 3-year contract. So they would have had his restricted free agent rights a year before, and it could have paid him much less to sign him then.
All Donnie Nelson's fault.
Sure. It's everybody but Cuban's fault. Whatever Cuban wants to say about these negotiations back in the spring, I'm going to trust my guys reporting all the way through. I'm going to trust people talking on the record all the way through. And I'm going to say that the Mavs messed that up. Now we get to the summer. The Mavs, obviously, as you point out, Brian, botched the negotiations on every front when it gets to the summer. Jalen goes to the Knicks. By the way, the part of this we haven't talked about at all is the Knicks have been a revelation this season and have been great. And a huge part of that has been Jalen Brunson's impact on and off the court. Pretty much shows what his impact in Dallas was last year on and off the court. And now we get to the most important part. For all the nonsense that Mark Cuban said yesterday in deflecting away from the fact that this season is a disaster, and frankly, they traded for a guy who I would rather not have compared to Jalen Brunson and Kyrie Irving to try to make up for the fact that they screwed all of this up. Here's what Mark Cuban said about Luka Doncic and his long-term future in Dallas. Look, players don't talk like that, just like, quote, hey, I'm here for the next 17 years, end quote. He'd like to be here the whole time, but we've got to earn that. And this is where we get to the crux of the issue with the Dallas Mavericks. They have very little way to keep Luka Doncic in Dallas and to convince him and earn the right for him to stay there because of the situation they have put themselves in through a series of moves over several years, going back to the Kristaps Porzingis move, going back to how they handled the Jalen Brunson situation, now coming to the Kyrie Irving situation where they are sitting, staring down the choice of having to pay Kyrie Irving all the money and signing up for the Kyrie Irving experience as that being the way for them to get out of jail in this situation, or Kyrie leaving this summer, going somewhere else, maybe them getting something back in a sign and trade, but probably not getting very much because they won't have any leverage really to do so. And then you've got limited draft picks going forward, a roster bereft of talent, and limited financial flexibility to go add players around Luka Doncic.
So Cuban basically said three things around a bunch of curse words and calling McMahon a moron. He basically tried to give the blame elsewhere, specifically.
Now, let's
stop using
the word basically. He tried to duck.
He blamed Rick Brunson for Jalen being gone.
That's one. Two, he talked about keeping Luka in the future and said that we've got to earn it. And three, he talked about Kyrie Irving's free agency. I don't want to muddle them together.
He said Kyrie was the top priority this summer.
And then you said,
I'm pushing him on that. Like, hey, okay, you've got his bird rights, by the way, just like you did with Brunson last year. You can pay him more than anybody. Like can you be outbid? That's the exact way I phrase it. He said, I don't know. I guess there's always too high a price depending, but now with the new CBA, it's a different world. And I kind of pushed him on that. And he said, you know, that's not the point. If you can't improve your team, you got to be able to improve your team. Right. Then he got into like, have you heard about this CBA, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, listen, if Kyrie Irving's your top summer priority, like good luck going to Kyrie with less than max, brother. Good. I wish you luck.
Word max means two different things. It means maximum salary And then it also means maximum years. And I don't think that the Nets were afraid of paying Kyrie Irving the maximum salary.
Mm-hmm.
What they were, I think the dispute was the number of years and or that it wouldn't be guaranteed and Kyrie would have to earn his way to get to that.
Yeah, earn even as if you it go. Was. Right. And how'd that work out for the Nets?
Well, that's the thing. The Nets weren't willing to do it, and that's why he was gone. So, and I'm guilty of this too, but the word max gets thrown around too much because some players only can sign for a certain amount but can't sign for the big amount for various reasons.
Here's where the word maximum comes in here. You know where the word maximum comes in here? Maximum leverage for Kyrie Irving, which is a remarkable thing to say after everything that's gone on with Kyrie Irving. But at the end of the day, you're sitting here as the Dallas Mavericks, and because they made a desperation trade after botching several things before that, whatever the version of events Mark wants to lay out there, the facts are the facts. They botched all these things. They were in a bad spot. They made it worse by making this Kyrie trade. And now they're in a position where they, again, either have to pay Kyrie what he wants to stay, which is probably going to be max dollars and max years, I would guess, because why should he take anything less from them?
I mean, I think it's going to be at least four, if not the full five for 272 mil.
Again, he has all the leverage.
Well, not only does he have the leverage,
he has no leverage here.
Part of the reason why he has the leverage is that they screwed up the Jalen thing. So
yes,
it's one thing if it was a negotiation that stood by itself. You have to negotiate with this player who has injury histories, who has off-court issues, who has, you know, commitment issues to a team. That's one thing. Then the other issue would be the fact that you have this new CBA that changes things when you're putting into it. And, you know, when Kyrie became available, as far as I know, four teams showed interest: the Lakers, the Clippers, the Suns, and the Mavericks. Maybe the truth is there were more teams. I don't know. Some teams tried to pretend like they weren't, but we knew the Lakers were interested. We know the Clippers were interested. The Suns at least kicked it around. The Mavericks made the deal. Okay, the Suns have now gone and traded for Kevin Durant. You can cross them off. The Clippers, with the new CBA rules, I don't think are going to be able to get Kyrie unless they gut their roster somehow.
There's no way they could get enough money under to do a sign and trade. They'd have to trade too many guys.
Because if you're so far over the cap, you can't receive a player in a sign and trade. So they could have traded for Kyrie last year during the season, but signing and trading for him is very hard. The Lakers could do it, but would have to basically release or get rid of all the free agents that they just acquired that they've gotten some traction on. That could happen, but it's a maybe at best. So you say Kyrie has great leverage, Bontemps. I agree with you, but also, does he really? Is there really a team?
Yes. Okay. I will see what happens with the Lakers. I find it very hard to believe the Lakers will say we'll have D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura instead of Kyrie Irving if they get presented the opportunity to do that. We'll see. That's not me reporting that, to be clear.
Right.
I just looking at it from the way the Lakers view things, the Lakers gutted a championship level team to trade for Russell Westbrook to have a star. Right. And this is a guy that LeBron James pretty publicly made clear he wanted the Lakers to get this past season. I think there's a pretty clear line to draw there if you want to.
And look, the other thing here, let's just be realistic about this. Do you want Kyrie Irving feeling like you've lowballed him and disrespected him? Like, the risk here is you bring back Kyrie, but he's disgruntled. We've seen how that goes. That's not a good situation either. Now, listen, you can debate whether, okay, but is committing max to that guy, is that better than having him feel disrespected right off the bat? Like, dude, these are all things that were considerations before you made the trade. And all we were hearing, well, you know, it's a test drive, kind of a trial period, and, you know, cap space if we don't go long-term on Kyrie. First of all, the cap space is like 20-something mil. It ain't max.
Again, this team had
– And who are you spending it on?
This team had limited, it's been saying this from the moment they made the trade. This team had very limited trade assets at its disposal. And they traded their 2029 first, which people said, oh, well, that's way in the future. It also messed up their ability to make trades in the interim. And on top of that, that's correct. And then on top of that, they trade Dorian Finney-Smith, their best perimeter player, our perimeter defender, and another guy that is tight with Luka and had a great relationship with Luka. Mm-hmm. And they trade him to make this trade happen. So again, you take two of his closest friends off the team. You replace him with Kyrie. And as you said the whole time, like Kyrie seems to have shown up and done everything that they've asked him to do. But the team has stunk. And now they've backed themselves into this corner where they have no choice but to do what Kyrie wants to keep him. Because if he leaves and they lose him for nothing, then they're sitting here with Luka Doncic 3 years away from free agency, which really means a year or two away from being in a position to ask out of town, with absolutely no path back to being a relevant team in the West.
Well, that's not true. That's not true. They have paths.
Oh, okay. They have paths. What is, well, wait a second. Well, let's break this down. What is the path? If let's say Kyrie leaves this summer, okay? Let's say he leaves under that scenario. What is the path from there for the Mavs to be a conference finals team in the next 3 years?
They still
How are they doing that?
They still have two picks that they can trade. They still have a couple of tradable pieces on their roster.
Just to be clear about the picks, okay? If they end up top 10, because they owe the Knicks, this top 10 protected pick is the final piece of the Porzingis trade. If they end up top 10, you can say they have two picks to trade. Oh, that means they're trading this pick, technically using it and then trading it, but obviously you can agree to a deal. And then 2027, if they give this pick up, they have 2025 and 2027.
That's fair. Okay, fine. They're going to potentially have a top 10 pick. That has value. Also, a few years ago, the Lakers went from 11th to 4th. Well, who's to say it couldn't happen again?
The Mavericks have never, the draft lottery gods.
Again, I said,
never moved I don't up. Care about the draft lottery gods. Just acknowledge again, that there are avenues. They may be narrow
I said if Kyrie leaves this summer, by that point, we know where the Mavs are. Yes, if they end up with your favorite player on the planet, Victor Wembanyama, in Dallas with Kyrie, sure. Mark Cuban could do a parade in the street and not and have a low-cost rookie-level superstar on his team again with Luka, and everything will be hunky-dory in Dallas. It'll be great. But again, I'm living in reality where there's a very small chance that that happens. And again, I will ask you, because what you've basically said is they have a couple picks they can maybe trade for one player. This is a team that's not one player away. It's a roster full of massive holes.
I know. I've been around again, long enough to know that a team that has multiple superstars is not really desperate, but they definitely are in some of the water is getting hotter.
We need to drill down on this again. Well, we need to drill down on this again because they wouldn't have multiple superstars if Kyrie leaves. They'd have one guy.
I will also say the other possibility with Kyrie is that they use his bird rights in a sign and trade situation. The least likely of the possibilities, because it requires cooperation from another team, you know, obviously from Kyrie, but it is a possibility. I'll just throw out a hypothetical here. You mentioned Phoenix. You know, obviously the Ayton Suns relationship has been rocky. Could there be something where Kyrie's heading to Phoenix, Ayton's heading to Dallas? It's a possibility. Like I said, it's the slimmest of the possibilities.
Yeah. I just I'm not fundamentally disagreeing with you, Bontemps. I just want to be clear. They're not desperate. But they're in trouble.
Wait a sec. How are they not desperate?
Because they still have Luka, they still have Luka and Kyrie's bird rights and two first round picks and a couple of young players on the roster.
You're desperate to prove to Luka that you have a chance to win a championship here. And we've talked about this all season. The clock's going tick, tick, tick.
I agree, but I've seen teams flip things around before. I just want to acknowledge that
it's Cuban mentioned that. And he mentioned, and let me make sure I'm quoting accurately here, but Cuban. I think he's probably well within his rights as a governor of an NBA team to mention other players on other teams, right? He said, we've got to earn Luka's loyalty, basically, right? He said, okay, how do you do that? Win championships. It's amazing how that cures all. I mean, before Giannis won, everybody was like, where's he going? Where's he going? He's not staying. He's not staying. Jokic, well, they haven't won.
They want him to go to Dallas. That's why they signed his brother.
Well, 100%. Obviously, the Mavericks were, and by the way, it was a long line, but the Mavericks were sure as hell in that line. Also, that's not the way things went. Because what the Bucks did was they built a championship caliber roster. Giannis didn't wait until they won a title to sign second extension.
He extended before. That's right.
He waited until they made the Drew Holiday.
Exactly. Exactly. They built it, and Giannis said, you know what? The organization has fulfilled their responsibility. They have put me in position to win a championship. It's on me here. I'll commit. I believe in what we've done.
And where's the Chris Middleton? Where's the Drew Holiday? Where's the Brooke Lopez? Listen, again, this is where you just say, pull something, out of a hat. Sure, that's not reality.
Brooke Lopez, let's just focus on Brooke Lopez. What a phenomenal bargain basement, or bargain bin signing by the Bucks. Remember, they got him for I think it was a $3 million one-year deal originally.
They signed signed it for the biannual exception when they signed him, I believe.
Right. They use an exception to get Brooke Lopez. Where's the Brooke Lopez on the Mavericks roster? Well, it's JaVale McGee. That doesn't quite.
How dare you not mention Christian Wood?
When Cuban said that Kyrie was their top summer priority, being the thorough reporter that I am, because I'm just trying to be thorough here, I said, "Oh, well, what about Christian Wood? Fans like him; he scores points. What about Christian Wood?" And
I know why McMahon gets banned.
He speaks
the truth. That's why
the people want to know that they love Christian Wood. The fans love Christian Wood. The coach. But the fans do. I said, what about Christian Wood? Curiously and politely, I asked. He said, I'm not going to go through individual players.
Look, I think to put a ball on this, the thing that matters about all of this is what happens with Luka going forward. And whether you want to say that they're desperate, whether you want to say they're not desperate, however you want to phrase the situation in Dallas, the bottom line is, as Mark Cuban himself said, the Mavericks have to earn the ability to get Luka to stay there. And as of right now, sitting here right now, looking at their situation right now, they're going to need a lot of luck to be able to put themselves in position to do that. Because it is not clear sitting here today how they're going to be able to have a team that's good enough to be where they were last year in the West without a significant amount of luck going their way.
Fellas, right, well, I will say this just real quick. Cuban did take some blame for the Mavericks situation. I was not able to get this into the story because there's the Brunson blaming and the Kyrie stuff and the Luka long-term stuff. I felt like took priority, but Cuban acknowledged that he really did screw up this summer. And I want to quote accurately. But what he did was he underestimated the impact of the take foul rule. That I'm not kidding you. He brought up the take foul like three or four different times. He underestimated the impact of the take foul rules is where things. Okay, he says, I didn't expect the change that would happen from the take foul and other things. We just didn't have the right personnel. It wasn't any one player. There were just different things that were needed this season from last season. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, but at midseason he traded his best defender. I mean,
that's what's derailed the whole Mavericks season was this take foul.
Well, he said the take foul and other things. Other things might have been trading his best defender for Kyrie. All right, they did score 60 points combined. They beat the Kings, and they kept their play-in hopes alive. Before we take a look at the play-in situation, that's fascinating. Bontemps, I think you've got trivia.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
I do. Speaking of playing teams, the Toronto Raptors are going to be in the play-in after losing to the Celtics last night. And the other day, Fred VanVleet set the franchise record with 20 assists in a game. Now has a 54-point game, franchise record for points. 20 assists game, franchise record for assists. Pretty good for an undrafted free agent.
He's about to get some of that Fred VanVleet money, baby.
He sure is. He will be an interesting free agent this summer.
You think he'll get more than $104 million this summer? Anyways, go on.
I feel pretty confident about that. There's one other player who holds the single game franchise record for points and assists in a game in NBA history. Who is it?
It ain't Luka, is it?
It is not Luka Doncic. No.
Okay. I know he's got the points. I wasn't certain about the assist.
Is the player active?
No.
Okay. Points? Oscar Robertson.
Nope.
Ah, that's a good guess. Man, this is all right. I'm gonna scroll through it. Okay, player's not active. Okay. All right, here we go. It ain't Larry Bird, is it?
Nope.
Okay, is this gonna be like, do we have any hope here? We have hope here.
Yes, you do.
Is it a Hall of Famer? Is it a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
It is a Hall of Famer. Okay.
Yeah.
It is a Hall of Famer.
This ain't some gotcha question.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about is the players. It's easier to think of the players who have the highest scoring record for games because, you know, that's, you know, that I can remember. I may not be able to get the guys who have the highest assists.
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
Man. Okay, you got to give us hints because we'll be here all day.
I mean, I'm giving you hints. He's a Hall of Famer.
Well, there's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame, Buttface.
He's an all-time great player.
Okay.
It's just not some kind of crazy, deep, secret name.
All-time great. All right, I'm gonna look at the all-time assist leader. Is he a guy who's known for assists?
Not particularly. He's led the league in assists.
He's led the league in assists. Mm. Oh, Lord. Okay. Mm. Okay. I
would have
lie.
To guess. Oh, no.
What was your guess, Brian?
I almost said LeBron, but he doesn't have either record.
It's not LeBron.
He's
James.
Also active.
He's also active.
I know. That's why I stopped myself.
It ain't Gary Payton, is it?
Nope. Gary Payton's a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't necessarily call him an all time great.
Isaiah Thomas.
Nope.
Zeke, Tiny Archibald. That's my final answer. Damn it. Nope.
All right, I give up.
Calvin Murphy. Oh, wait. Harden broke his scoring record.
I'm sort of stunned that this is not going to be answered. The answer is Wilt Chamberlain.
Ah!
That's always a good answer for everybody. For which team?
Tied for the single game assist record with the Sixers. I was just what waiting the Sixers, for just guessing is, Wilt by default is usually a good trivia guess.
Right. That's true.
And he did lead the
league. What is the assist number?
I do not know the number off the top of my head. I had it a few days ago and I don't remember.
Well, no one's breaking that scoring record, probably.
So no, the 100 points is pretty safe, I think.
All right. That was a good one. That was a good one.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, we should always default, but you don't know the answer, just default to Will.
Well, I kept trying to hit towards like maybe guess.
You're right.
Like,
all-time
player in every single record.
Well, the best hint you gave.
He had 21 assists. He had 21 assists. It was as a career high, and it was for the Sixers. Yes.
That was the one year he decided he was going to lead the league in assists.
He decided to lead the league in assists. Yeah.
Right. By the way, that was a game when he had 22 points, 25 rebounds, 21 assists.
Amazing. Okay, so Bontemps and I talked about this earlier. After what happened on Wednesday night where the Clippers beat the Lakers for an 11th consecutive time, just throttled them in the first half of that game, he pretty much ended it there. You know, LeBron said after the game, there was a schedule. He didn't say it was a schedule loss. He said it was schedule related loss or something.
He said it was a schedule loss. That's exactly what he said.
I mean,
which, by the way, it might not have been a schedule loss if the Lakers had been able to put away the Utah Jazz on Tuesday night with Luka Saminich starting at power forward, who they signed 4 days before.
Well, listen, and that's fair, but they
were, forget about who started. They were up by 10 with like 2.5, 3 minutes
to
go.
And they're playing a Clipper team, and they're playing a Clipper team that had beat them 10 times in a row, and their second best player.
But this is what happens when you are coming back from what they came back from. Their first 50 games.
You have no margin for error.
You have no margin for error. And it was clear, like LeBron was awful in the first half of this game. He's throwing the ball over the place, couldn't make a shot. AD wasn't much better. And they got down by like 18 at the break. And, you know, they made a bit of a run the second half, but, and LeBron had 30 in the second half after having like three in the first half. But it was, you know, that's what happened. So now they're out of position. The Clippers and Warriors are tied with the Clippers having the tiebreaker. And Bontemps and I went over this pretty in depth before the pod. And Bontemps, I kind of identified two games that are going to basically have a big factor in how this is all going to shake out. Go ahead with those two games.
Yeah. So if you want to know how the West playoff picture is going to look Sunday night, there's two games to focus on. The first one is today, Friday. The Warriors are in Sacramento playing the Kings. Very massive game. And then Sunday, the Pelicans and Wolves play in Minnesota. Minnesota on second half of back-to-back. That's also going to be a pretty massive game. So, obviously, Golden State is right now sitting at sixth. They lose the tiebreaker with basically every team, which, as Brian has said a couple different times, is a very easy thing to do when you literally lose every single road game. So, they basically lose out on all tiebreakers. So, if the Warriors win their final two games, they win, or if they beat Sacramento on Friday, they play Portland on Sunday. They're going to beat Portland. We've talked about
let me speak. We'll make sure of it.
Let me speak a word on Portland real quick.
Portland
has an interesting situation. Saturday they play the Clippers. Sunday they play the Warriors. As Bontemps and both of those games, potentially the Clippers
don't
and Warriors,
buy tickets.
Well, it's interesting because there's a possibility, depending on how everything falls, that the Clippers and Warriors may prefer to lose those games, one of those games, because it could help them get into sixth as opposed to fifth.
Where's Daniel Oturo?
But Bontemps will explain in a second why that's harder for the Warriors. But anyway, the Blazers have 33 wins as we do this podcast. And what'd you say, Bontemps? There are three teams in the East.
The Magic, Wizards, and Pacers all currently have 34 wins. Right. So right now, Portland is sitting by itself at, I believe, sixth in the lottery odds. And if they win one more game, they'll be in a four-way tie for sixth.
Right.
They have 33 wins as we do this podcast, and they are hell-bent on having 33 wins at the end of the season.
So the funny thing is they play the Clippers and Warriors in games where the Clippers and Warriors may want to try shenanigans with a hat tip to Jackie McMullen. Bontemps made the joke to me earlier today. If it takes play with less than five, They're losing those games.
Mike Schmitz, our former colleague, a hell of a talent scout, they've got him scouring local YMCAs to find guys.
Schmitz was going to play.
he might be too damn good for what they're trying to do.
Well, the Blazers do keep signing players that they just keep signing guys. I didn't know who they are. And then
they're signing guys who are mediocre G League players and playing them heavy minutes without practicing. I mean, as blatant a tanking as we've seen since the Blazers last year.
Yeah, it's gross. But here's the deal.
All right, so go ahead. Sorry, I just had to bring up the Blazers.
No, it's fine. No, it's good. All this stuff matters. So the Warriors have this game against the Kings. They win this game. Let's pencil them in for a win on Sunday. They've got 44 wins then. That puts them above the Lakers. What the Lakers could get, they can only get to 43 if they win out. New Orleans could only get to 43 if they win out. So now you have a situation where, okay, you're the Clippers, right? You talk about these games the Clippers have. They play Saturday against Portland. They play Sunday against Phoenix. If we have the Warriors at 44 wins, let's say you're the Clippers. Well, we don't want to play Phoenix. I think that's stupid. You got to beat the teams that are in front of you. Whatever. I'm not worried about playing positioning if I really think I can win it, or playoff positioning, if I really think I can win a championship. Set that aside. All right, we want to play. We want to be six for the Clippers. What would rather play Sacramento? If they lose, say to the Suns on Sunday, and they have 43 wins, and the Pelicans win out, win that game, they're going to play the Knicks Friday night. Knicks have nothing to play for. Jalen Brunson's probably going to sit again with this hand thing he's dealing with. Julius Randle's out. Pelicans should win that game. Pelicans win that game and then beat Minnesota on Sunday, and the Lakers beat Phoenix and Utah, two games they could win. Phoenix has nothing to play for. If those three teams are tied with 43 wins, the Pelicans will be the sixth seed, the Clippers will be the seventh seed, and the Lakers will be the eighth seed. And the Clippers and Lakers will be playing in the play-in. So the Clippers essentially in that scenario have a choice. The choice is finish fifth or finish seventh.
That's no choice.
And there's no choice because, I'm tired of people talking about, you can't play Phoenix in the first round. You know what you can't do if you're the Clippers? Be in the play-in tournament. That is an absolute non-starter. You need the week off to rest, get ready for the playoffs, and have your best shot to win.
You think we could see load management in the 7-8 play-in game?
Well, here's one thing that is interesting. So the Lakers are not out of this. They're out of position, though, with that loss. The next Lakers game is Friday against the Suns, who have not lost, at least as we do this pod, again, with Durant in the lineup. They play tonight in Denver. The question is, will Phoenix, on the second night of a back-to-back, play their full roster or not? I don't know the answer.
I would sit KD on the second night of a back-to-back.
It would not surprise me. So the question,
I think he can go either way because he hasn't played. And like, if they get a chance to play against a real team, like they got to get some minutes on the court.
Yeah.
I think you can make a good argument either way.
I would err on the side of caution with Kevin Durant.
And Ayton is coming off an injury and you're always protecting Chris Paul. Like, here's the thing, the Lakers, for this week at least, did have the downside schedule situation against the Clippers. Well, they would potentially get an upside schedule situation against the Suns. So that's one question. The other question is, will the Kings, who lost when they lost to Dallas on Wednesday, they pretty much is Memphis totally clinched the two seed?
It's not totally clinched, but it's a 90 plus percent.
It's a magic number of one. They need one Memphis win or one Kings loss.
So the Kings are pretty much locked into the third seed. Do the Kings go all out on Friday against the Warriors? Do they play their full roster on Friday against the Warriors? Knowing that how that game goes could mean a lot of things. Number one, if the Warriors come in going full power against the Kings and win, and sort of lock down that they may play the Kings in the first round, what does that do? You could send the other message. You could just beat them and say, you're not coming in here and touching us. The beam's getting lit, whether you want it or not.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Well, how do the Kings approach it? That's a big factor here on who's going to play their rosters. in these, in, because I agree with you, Bontemps, Pelicans, Wolves, and Kings, Warriors, but also in a subsection, just because the Lakers are the Lakers. Suns, Lakers is sort of like, you know,
well, no, 2B but, the, but of those. Well, games. Again, we're back in that we have to talk about the Lakers, but the reason that game doesn't matter as much is because those other two games are the pivot points that determine everything else. If Golden State loses to Sacramento, they're going to be in the play-in. And if Golden State beats Sacramento, they're going to be sixth. Like, that's it. There's no real ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, that's how it's going to go. You know, the Lakers can wind up anywhere.
Well, unless the Clippers lose both games.
The Clippers are not losing to Portland. No chance.
Okay. Well, I just want to acknowledge the possibility.
As hard as the Blazers tank, the Clippers' ability to tank in an attempt to dictate playoff matchups is historically phenomenal as well. Again, we go back to Daniel Oturo. Where is he these days? Getting like 47 post-ups in the last two games.
He's probably on a flight to Portland.
I know, but this is the thing, though. It's like the Clippers.
Or maybe LA.
Because of how this shakes out, the Clippers can't really navigate this effectively.
I agree. I just want to acknowledge that possibility exists.
I understand, but we're living in worlds where, like, look, maybe New Orleans loses to the Knicks with nothing to play for on Friday, and this doesn't come to pass. But again, New Orleans has every reason to play that out all the way to the end. They're at home.
And the Knicks don't.
The Knicks have nothing to play for. They sat a bunch of guys in Indiana last night and won, but I don't think they're going to win in New Orleans with New Orleans trying to win. So again, like that Kings game tomorrow it's just a massive, massive game, because you either have the Warriors sitting in sixth with a week off to get Andrew Wiggins ramped up, and you could say Golden State with Memphis and the Memphis-Sacramento half of the bracket, Phoenix and Denver on the other side, you look at them and say, hey, this is the team that maybe is going to be favored to come out of the West, or they could be looking at playing the Lakers in a play-in game or the Clippers in a play-in game or something, and causing them to be in a situation where they got to fight to even make the playoffs. And it all comes down to one road game, fittingly, for a team that can't win a road game this season.
By the way, the final spot in the play-in could very well be decided by whether the Grizzlies give a crap about game 82.
Well, yeah, we should explain this. We should explain this situation too. You want to lay that out?
And people are going to know the result of Thunder Jazz by the time they hear this podcast. For the sake of this discussion, let's assume that the Jazz don't accidentally win tonight, right? So essentially, and let's give the Mavericks, who have been extremely capable of losing to teams missing multiple stars/starters this year, let's assume they figure out a way to beat the Bulls Friday night, where the Bulls, Billy Donovan basically said, hey, we're probably going to sit.
Yeah, to explain that one, the Bulls are locked into 10th. They have nothing to play for. And frankly, if they don't make the playoffs, losing these last couple games gives them a better chance of maybe jumping up in the top four. And by the way, keeping their pick from their own rough trade for a center.
Uh-oh, Mavs playing hopes just took a little hit. That protest is denied. Denied by the NBA. Anyways, well, shock. Listen, this is shocking. So here we go. We're going to, for the sake of this discussion, we're going to assume Thunder beat Jazz, Mavs beat the Windy City Bulls. Okay. And here we go. Then it comes down to the Mavs have the Spurs on Sunday afternoon. I don't believe the Spurs will be too motivated to avoid having the worst record in the league in that game. I'm going to give the Mavs benefit of the doubt and say they're able to pull that one out. At the same time, just up I-35 across the old Red River, you're going to have those Memphis Grizzlies in Oklahoma City. And basically, if OKC wins that one, the Mavs are bye-bye, adios, off to Cancun and contract negotiations with Kyrie.
Yeah, the Mavs need a Thunder loss and two wins to get in the playoffs, to state it plainly.
There you go. And listen, I think it's time to get the big German involved here. You got to get Dirk. Dirk Taylor Jenkins, Grizzlies coach, grew up here in Dallas. Huge Dirk fan. He's told these stories about how him and his family used to go. They'd sit up in the nosebleeds and just root on the Dirkster. Dirk, pick up the phone, maybe even fly to Memphis, give Taylor a pep talk. Taylor, we know you're locked into the two seed, but we need you, buddy. We need you. You got to get the big German involved here.
Listen, man,
to pull those emotional strings.
I don't think the Grizzlies are probably going this deep into their analysis, but I know I'd probably rather, well.
No, honestly, if you're sitting, if you want to be devious and you're the Grizzlies, hey, let's be rested up. And would we like for the Mavericks franchise to blow up? Yeah, we would. Would them missing the play-in be a good thing for the long-term health of that franchise? No, it wouldn't. Obviously, the small risk being that they end up winning the lottery again in Victor. By the way, speaking of that Bulls-Mavs game, so we've talked about that top 10 protected pick. Now, the Mavericks right now are in a three-way tie for the 10th best lottery odds. One of those teams that they're tied with, those Chicago Bulls, baby. And boy, do the Bulls have motivation to improve their lottery odds as much as possible now that they've clinched the last play-in spot in the East with no chance to move up. Because, Wendy, what's the protection on that Bulls pick this year?
Top four.
So, geez, really convenient time for the Bulls to have their good players kick up their feet.
Well, that's why if the Mavericks had lost on Wednesday and been eliminated, then it would have made sense for them to fold the tent for the last couple of games. But they didn't lose, and they're still alive. So,
well, by the way, if you're really trying to game this out and you're Memphis, right, it's probably better in the aggregate if you beat Oklahoma City and if Dallas wins out and makes the playoffs, or not makes the playoffs, wins out and then loses in the play-in tournament and they lose this pick. Like, that's probably, you know,
well, I thought more
lowering their odds of getting a chance at jumping up into the top four is probably the better long-term way to subvert their franchise than them finishing 11th and missing the play-in.
Yeah. Well,
there's at least a debate about that.
I don't know if
me.
Memphis is going to have this deep of a discussion about
probably
this.
Not. Probably not.
Say, is anybody's knee sore? Shut him down.
The Grizz is getting their analytics department. Hey,
I mean, it'd be
what's the best way for us to screw the Mavericks here?
Right. It's maybe one thing if they could play the winner out of 9-10, but 9-10, best they can do is the eighth. So right. If Memphis like to say, well, we'd rather play Oklahoma City than Dallas, but that
it is going to be interesting to see how some of these teams handle these games too, because you do potentially have a week between games here. So it's not like it used to be where the season ended Wednesday night and you were playing potentially Saturday at noon. Like the fact you have a week off, you might see Jaren Jackson and Tyus Jones and Ja Morant and Desmond Bane. Like you might see all these guys play pretty good amount of minutes.
Well, and I will just point out, like, listen, the Grizzlies can go in there, you know, full speed, playing everybody, and still lose in Oklahoma City.
For sure.
They did earlier this season when Ja got booted and FaceTime a fan via his dad, Team Moran.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
during the game. But look, the Grizzlies have been a crap road team this year. They're awesome at home, bad on the road. Not quite to the extreme of the Warriors, but not too far off. They're 15-24 on the road. OKC's, you know, good at home, not great, good, 23-17. So it's not, I don't want to just say, hey, it's totally up to the Grizzlies because, you know, the Thunder get to play basketball
for sure.
If you try to win.
No, Thunder, for sure.
Well, I mean,
but it is an interesting little situation where the Grizzlies have some influence here.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, we could see some interesting stuff on Sunday afternoon for sure. The other thing I'll want to point out, with the Warriors, obviously they don't want to have any part of the play-in, but as if they need any more incentive, Steve Kerr said yesterday that Andrew Wiggins was not going to play in Sacramento or in Portland over the weekend because they just got to get him ramped up through some practices. That's another huge reason for the Warriors to get the week off so that
absolutely.
You can put Wiggins through a couple of full contact workouts and
well,
build him
and
back
give-
up.
And give Clay a week off and give Draymond a week off and give Steph. Like if you get into the play-in tournament, like you're one sprained ankle away from your season being done. And if you're one of these teams, whether it's the Lakers, like there's been talk this week, oh, is it better for the Lakers to be in the play-in than play the Suns? Absolutely not. Like any extra game that LeBron and AD have to play is another game that they could get hurt. Like, it's just crazy. Like, you need to have as much rest as possible for these veteran teams at this point. And that's where that game, like, there's probably not there. The Clipper Laker game was a gigantic game because whichever team won that game had a huge advantage to get into the top six. And now there's no bigger game left on the schedule in the league than this Kings Warriors game. Because if Sacramento wins that game, Golden State's in the play-in. We'll see what happens there and how that goes. And if the Warriors win, they're sitting pretty to be the sixth seed, and they got Andrew Wiggins back, and things are going to be looking pretty good in the Bay.
Two words. Light years. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to Bruce, our producer. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon. Who knows where we'll be by Sunday night the next time we record?
You know where we'll be? The end of the regular season. That's where we'll be.
Thank goodness.
Season over.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.